I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, 2 hours a day. In these hours of today, second hour, we will get into False Flag Friday. Lots to talk about, foreign policy stuff. Got to tell you, there's not a whole lot of difference between the presidents when it comes to foreign policy stuff. People don't like to hear that, but it appears to be true. We'll cover that news next hour, and then we will do what we always do, as we chronicle the world's descent into madness, finishing up this week with This Week on the Crazy Train. I've got a ton of clips for today. It is it's an interesting time to be alive. It's a great time to be an observer. I've got to tell you that. I don't like that I'm the fate of myself and my children are going to be drug along with the decisions made by the rest of the country. But to watch it all unfold is quite interesting these days. I got quotes of the day today. First one is from Bill Maher. Bill Maher, who's fighting the cancel culture, but he gets some other things right, too. Bill Maher said this: America is like a political prison now, where the inmates think they need to join one of the gangs to survive, and we dare not walk on the wrong side of the yard. America is like a political prison now, where the inmates think they need to join one of the gangs to survive, and we dare not walk on the wrong side of the yard. That's, you know, I think I sense in that Bill Maher's probably been under attack because he dares to walk on the other side of the yard sometime. He has been calling out woke culture on his show. I can't imagine the heat he has taken for that. So here was an interesting quote from Edward Snowden. We're familiar with Edward Snowden, right? I know we don't talk about him very much. They've tried to memory hole him. We've exiled him in Russia, where he is more free than he would be in the United States. Edward Snowden is the whistleblower, the NSA whistleblower, who told the American people that your government is spying on everything that you do. And this corrupt government chased him out of the country, attempted to kidnap him, and he found refuge in Putin's Russia. And Edward Snowden tweeted this out. He said, "I've never understood the political fear of libertarians." Quote, "Sure, they're not in power now, but someday they might take over and leave you alone, I guess, since that's kind of their whole deal." He said it's like being afraid of cats. See, I actually have an answer to this one. Ed, they don't fear libertarians because of what would happen if they take over. The two political parties fear libertarians because they fear losing power over 330 million Americans and the ability to steal from all of those people. It has absolutely nothing to do with libertarians and their idea of freedom and actually getting the government out of our lives. That's not what Republicans who have been coming out against the Libertarian Party recently fear. They fear losing power. They fear losing being on the receiving end of the theft that is taxation and their ability to take that giant pie, that giant pile of cash, and dole it out to their donor buddies so that they can stay in office until they decide to parachute out into some cushy jobs for the businesses that they crafted legislation for while they were in office. They fear libertarians might upset the game. They don't fear what libertarians would do if they were actually in charge of governing. And the Libertarian Party itself tweeted this out. They forced people to watch their loved ones die alone on a Zoom call. Pandemic amnesty should be completely out of the question. There has been people from all kinds of areas coming out against this Atlantic article about pandemic amnesty. It really is. It was an interesting trial balloon by the Atlantic. It is a subtle, the subtext is, yeah, we got everything wrong, but you can't hold us accountable for any of that. I would say I was kind of looking over people talking about that. If every single person that was in a position of power, like Thomas Dobbs, agreed to give up his medical license and exit public health altogether, if every one of those, that includes Fauci and Walensky, Trump's Surgeon General, every single one of them, if every one of these health policymakers decided to give up their licensure and never again be involved in public health measures with the stated reason that we were so dramatically wrong in everything that we told the American people and destroyed so many lives that it's unconscionable that we could continue in these careers, so we have decided to completely abdicate our positions of power, maybe amnesty could be on the table for each other. Because it is those people, who preyed on the victims out there, the people they turned into absolute hypochondriacs, agoraphobics. It is those people in power that were responsible for the brainwashing and the fear-mongering in the first place. So if that should happen, if Thomas Dobbs is ready to come on television and tell us that he will leave the University Medical Center and abdicate all of his roles in public health whatsoever, if Thomas Dobbs becomes a greeter at Walmart and people understand why he has had to take that position, then maybe there can be some amnesty. I'm reading these tweets. The new Elon Twitter greeted me with this yesterday as I went on to Twitter to see if I could find some clips for this week on the Crazy Train. It is invaluable for finding some bizarro clips and some interesting stories. But we're all waiting anxiously for this return to free speech and sanity at Twitter, but I found this interesting. This was what greeted me on Twitter yesterday when I opened it up. The big top message was, and it filled up the whole page. This was very, it was a big. It says, it takes time to count all the votes. It's expected to take multiple days to count the votes, so the projected winners of some elections might not be announced yet. This means you could encounter unconfirmed claims that a candidate has won their race. And there was a button, two buttons actually. One was for find out more. I didn't go through that one. And then learn how voting by mail is safe and secure. This was the top banner that I guess everybody saw when they went to Twitter yesterday. They had options. Twitter, Elon's new Twitter, was letting everybody understand how voting by mail is safe and secure. So this is very interesting. You know, it's funny for me to see Republicans freaking out about cheating in elections. Republicans take this very, very seriously. But have you not ever seen professional wrestling? I mean, the whole thing, and I've told you that politics is political pro wrestling. They go out, they make their boisterous statements, and then they attend the same cocktail parties, and they take money from the same people. The promoters of wrestling, WrestleMania, pay every single one of the wrestlers on that card. And the same patrons, the same promoters of the political system, the same people pay both Republicans and Democrats. So cheating in elections is just basically the same thing as professional wrestling when the ref turns his back and someone sneaks a chair into the ring and cracks somebody over the head. And the referee does a bunch of wild gestations like he's going to actually do something about it, and while he's got his back turned to scold the guy with the chair that brought the chair in, something else happens and they throw somebody out of a ring onto a table below. this is what I'm just saying. Now, this is a little tongue-in-cheek. Cheating in elections obviously is bad, but when you think of it in the broader context, that what we're witnessing is really just political theater. It's professional wrestling. Cheating is a big part of wrestling. It's all scripted. And I just don't think people quite understand, maybe to the extent, that politics is staged exactly like the WWE is. AOC when it comes to Twitter. Apparently she's been, something's happened with her. I don't know enough about Twitter to really comment on this, but she did put out a video. This was kind of interesting. And then there's some other kind of concerning things about Twitter we're going to talk about too as we watch the new takeover. People have a lot of hope pinned to Elon Musk's ascendancy to the top of Twitter. This was AOC. It is going to be interesting to see some of the left upset about these things.
I was at a community event in the Bronx in Co-op City. And when I get home...
She's eating. You can kind of tell a little muffled and she seems a little distracted. She's eating what appears to be a McDonald's chicken nugget while she does this very important message to her followers.
I see a text from my team saying, "Hey, let me know if you need any help with this Elon stuff." And I was like, "What?" So I pull up my Twitter app and it's like gone. Like when you pull up your mentions and stuff like that, it's just like literally like a blank screen, totally gone. And I was like, that's weird. So it turns out we got under a certain little billionaire skin.
Oh, so there you go. Now, what I think is interesting about this, when I watched it, as an observer of the system, only just monitoring human behavior, this thing hit me where I know what the reaction of many people on the right would be if they found out that AOC was being censored on Twitter. They would celebrate it. There would be this idea of, yeah, serves you right. Finally, the right is censoring the left. It's very interesting to me because isn't this all about free speech? And so if your knee-jerk reaction is conservatives have been censored for the last several years on platforms like Twitter and Facebook and the rest of these places, so now we're glad to see it happening to the left, then I will submit to you, you don't understand free speech. And I believe that's what it is. This is what politics does to people. We only understand the value of free speech if we are being suppressed. But if others are being suppressed, then we're not so down with free speech. And I'm going to bring up something very, very unpopular. I've never successfully launched this, but it's Fight Club Friday. So if you disagree with me, you're welcome to call in. But this was, to me, this idea is very similar to the idea, well, we're okay with peaceful protests, but this BLM stuff is out of control. Yet when football players took a knee, the right freaked out. Whether you agree with it or not, and I don't want any politics in my sports either, I find it distasteful, but if you want peaceful protest, a football player going down to his knee is about as innocuous as it can be, as far as it's a little in your face, and of course the media makes a big deal out of it. It's annoying, there's no doubt about it, but there isn't the destruction of a BLM protest. People will say, we're okay with peaceful protest, but when you burn down city blocks, that's too far. But then when a peaceful protest takes place, people lose their ever-loving minds. It's just very interesting to me to see, and as I've said, hypocrisy has become somewhat of a national pastime here. But it's very, very hard to remain intellectually pure when you get into partisan politics. You have to do all kinds of mental gymnastics to figure out why it would be great for AOC to finally be censored at the same time you've been crying for free speech for a couple of years. So anyway, something to think about when we come back. A couple other stories about Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter. There are some concerning alarm bells going off when it comes to this. We'll get to that when we come back. Stick around. I went home with a waitress. The way I always do. How was I to know? She was with the Russians. I am well aware. Probably there's been many people who have listened to this show over the years and thought, what is this guy, some leftist on conservative talk radio? My roots are in conservatism. I was a Kool-Aid drinking neocon Republican for a period of time. But what really struck me was the inconsistencies of so many of the positions on the right. And this is one of the reasons I kind of left. I mean, I guess I would still be considered a right. I'm a small, limited government guy, wherever that lands on the spectrum these days. I don't even know. The political labels are they're such a mishmash of stuff. I want to be left alone. I'm for a teeny tiny government. I'm forgetting the government out of our lives, out of our wallets. So libertarianism is the best philosophy that I found along that way. I'm anti-war. It's interesting to me that anti-war is a controversial term, or at least has been, on the right. Very few people will actually use that word. And if you stop and think about the term anti-war, that's interesting. To me, that's as controversial as saying I'm anti-cancer. But we have been so propagandized to in this country where we believe that wars are necessary. Now, people are starting to realize the Iraq War, maybe not necessary. There were no weapons of mass destruction, and Saddam Hussein didn't have anything to do with 9/11 and certainly had no ability to strike the United States. So maybe unnecessary, but for so long, it's just interesting. The label anti-war is somehow controversial. I'm for strong national defense, but I don't want wars. People and children, and if those things don't matter to you, puppies. Puppies die in wars. So being anti-war, for that to be controversial on the right is strange to me. But all I'm asking for is a little bit of intellectual consistency across the base, across the board. Now, when I unpopularly bring up the fact that football players taking a knee was a peaceful protest, at least, I totally disagree with BLM riots that burned places down. They burned a Wendy's down just because it was in proximity to a police shooting. Wendy's obviously having nothing to do with it, but they took out this rage and burned down a Wendy's hamburger joint. That might have made people in the neighborhood a little healthier, but anyway. I disagree with those kinds of things, but here's how you can kind of test your consistency, if you want to. Most people really don't care. But if you got upset, if you got upset because football players took a knee, even though I don't agree with the cause, and there's a whole lot of things, but that's all right. There's a whole lot of things I don't agree with, but if people want to peacefully protest them, that's the great thing about the United States. But if you got mad because football players took a knee, imagine, I think Aaron Rodgers is a pretty conservative guy. He courageously went after the vaccine regime. Famously just tried to kind of avoid the topic, but when pressed on it, he went, "Nah, I didn't take the thing." And he's gone out and talked about ivermectin and everything else, and he's kept his endorsements and kept his contract. I guess the guy's uncancelable. I don't know how he escaped the wrath of the cancel culture, but if Joe Biden showed up at a football game and Aaron Rodgers turned his back on Joe Biden during this football game, how many conservatives out there do you think would say, that Aaron Rodgers, he needs to keep politics out of football? No. Aaron Rodgers would be lifted up on our shoulders and danced around the room. We'd be so happy to see that. This is the same point I've made before, where we tell actors to shut up and act and singers to shut up and sing and athletes to shut up and play when they say something we don't like, but when somebody says something we do like, we make them heroes. We follow them on Twitter. It's not that we want political messaging out of entertainment. We want someone who doesn't agree with us out of the public dialogue. So it's just interesting. You know, if you got mad at the football players taking a knee, would you be mad if Aaron Rodgers showed disrespect at a football game to Joe Biden? I wouldn't be. So if you're consistent, I'm just asking for a little bit of consistency. It's not like a demand. It doesn't really matter, but I think that intellectually, it makes life much easier with some consistency. And my brain never hurts from trying to twist it and tie it into knots to try to justify my team's behavior because I don't have a team. It's great. The Libertarian Party does something wackadoodle like they've been doing for years and years before this. I called them out and told them what a train wreck the Libertarian Party was. I didn't have to carry water for them. It's beautiful. So much easier to sleep at night. And I'm challenged to get a good night's sleep in the first place. So anything I can do, anything I can do to keep some calmness in my head when I try to go to sleep at night is of benefit to me. When we get back, I wanted to talk a little bit about Twitter stuff. Because there are some things happening with Twitter in this takeover that has been so eagerly anticipated that are concerning. Maybe? Are they a sign of things to come? We'll talk about that when we come back. Stick around.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. So Twitter's been taken over by Elon Musk. I think a lot of people have been eagerly anticipating it. I think it's pretty interesting. The rumors are now that within the next week, about half of Twitter employees are going to lose their jobs. The people that have been eager censors of anybody on Twitter, I don't mind seeing them lose their jobs. Elon Musk sent out a tweet. He said something like, I've found out there's 10 managers, he said something to the effect of, I think there's, I got into Twitter, I found out there's like 10 managers for every coder. So Twitter has built itself up into huge bureaucracy as well. I guess as soon as you tie yourself to the federal government, as The Intercept has told us now, that story strangely not covered by the mainstream media in favor of the Paul Pelosi attack. But he's found out that... And, you know, this is a company, Twitter, that just burned through all this zero interest rate money. One of the reasons that Twitter became so valuable, even though they lost money year after year after year after year after year, I guess they're making money now. I haven't probably looked in the last couple of years, but it's a messaging app. Obviously, they staffed it up because there was all this Fed printed up money, zero interest rate money, looking for places to go, looking for growth companies. So Twitter became what Twitter became as a result of the Death Star, the Federal Reserve. And they were able to apparently just get this to be this bloated organization and then end up being a tool of the federal government. And so now, supposedly, Elon Musk is going to come and upset the apple cart. Let's see how upset he's going to make it. The first controversy over it that I really don't get is this idea that people are freaking out. A lot of the blue check mark left is freaking out about this $8 a month, apparently, for the blue check mark. Now, I don't get this. I don't think I've ever tweeted, so I look at the site to get news clips and things like that, get quotes. I don't think I've ever tweeted. I'm not a blue check mark. I think that means you're, but they verify your identity. So if you see the blue check mark, you can rest assured that's actually the person. Of course, I'm sure the White House or Joe Biden has a blue check mark, and I can guarantee you he's not writing any of his own tweets. But supposedly this means that you are who you say you are. You know, when it comes to social media, the idea of rebelling against a fee for it is strange to me, but it's like Facebook. People who use Facebook, I don't know if they realize that their data is the product. You are the product. Imagine the number, I'm sure it's in the billions of people, who use Facebook on a monthly basis. So if Facebook was to just charge $10 a month, what are we talking? I don't know how many billions of people use Facebook, if it's a billion. So they could just turn the key and make $10 billion a month if Facebook charged $10. I think this, for Elon Musk, I think this is a good business decision to bring in some cash from a company that has struggled to make profits. But why doesn't Facebook charge $10 to their users? You know why? Because the information that you give them about yourself apparently is more valuable than $10 billion a month in revenue they could raise by making it a subscription service. Personally, for me, I would rather, if I was a Facebooker, of which I am not, I would rather pay somebody $10 and protect my privacy and my information than to go on to Facebook for, air quotes here in the studio, free, and actually become the product that allows Mark Zuckerberg to buy entire islands in the Hawaiian island chain. I have no desire to make Mark Zuckerberg rich with my personal data, and that's what's happened. So I don't understand the consternation about the $8 in any kind of fee, really. I think Twitter should be $4.99 a month. I think most people would pay that. It seems like that's a much more transparent and free market business model to me. The idea they have to kind of sneak around and just suck up all of your data and sell it to the highest bidders is creepy to me. But This was, these are some of the uh-oh moments of Twitter right now as we're watching this. If there was only some talk show host that had tried to temper people's expectations and warn you about trying to create another savior, I've told you, the guy got rich off of a lot of government money. I'm a little hesitant to believe that he's going to be the savior of everybody at the same time. Elon Musk, an interesting guy. A lot of people with autism that are on the spectrum, which Elon appears to be, but he's one of these genius guys on the spectrum somewhere. So he's interesting, but I've tempered my thoughts that he is going to be any great savior, and then I ran across this.
And the bottom line, David, it doesn't look like most banned accounts are coming back anytime soon. Musk tweeting today that he's forming a content moderation council of wildly diverse viewpoints before making any decisions. And then following up in a second tweet that anyone suspended for minor or dubious reasons will have their accounts restored.
So there will be a moderation council there. Now, I don't know. Maybe it'll be a good moderation council. Maybe they will only take the most extreme examples and be very judicious and sparing with their suspensions of accounts. That has yet to be seen. But anybody who thought this was going to be a free speech free-for-all on Twitter, I think that might not be the case. Then came the news that apparently Elon Musk has met with the Anti-Defamation League to get advice on regulating hate speech. And I'm sorry, it's dereliction of duty here. I did not bring up the tweet. I did read these where he said that he had met, and he gave a laundry list of at people that he had met with, and they had come to some level of agreement to police hate speech on Twitter. Again, this is the Anti-Defamation League, certainly no friend to any conservative out there. And I think this just is just some warning. We'll see how this plays out. I think it would be very interesting if Elon Musk did come out and give a free speech platform, but you may want to keep your powder dry and keep your Parler accounts and your Gab accounts and any alternatives. This may not be the panacea that you thought it was going to be. Now, I don't know what the constant need for a savior is. My suspicion is, just as an observer, my suspicion is that people need political saviors, business heroes, these kinds of things, because it is so much easier to think that someone is going to come in and save the day than for us to actually have to get off our butts and get to a school board meeting or actually engage with any of the political process ourselves. It's much easier to believe that one billionaire or another, and the strange thing is, in this world where we understand that we have a system of oligarchy here, we keep looking to billionaires to be our saviors. A listener had sent me, and thank you, Keith, I haven't read it yet, but a listener sent me something on the PayPal Mafia they're called, of which Elon Musk is one. PayPal, we know what that is degenerated into. This is the company that threatened to go in and take $2,500 out of your account. I think if you expressed a forbidden opinion. But Elon Musk did come from that world. So we'll see. We'll see. I could be cautiously optimistic, but in my opinion, we've been burned by billionaire saviors before. Many people don't share that view, but I believe it's certainly true. So we'll see how the Elon Musk at Twitter stuff goes. But there are some uh-oh moments that are going on with Twitter right now. Speaking of some uh-oh moments, I'm going to take a look at, ran across a real estate expert who's meeting with the White House. I'm going to throw a little bit of financial news in here before we get on with our segments next hour. Yeah.
It's been a ride. I guess I had to go to that place to get to this one. Now, some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me.
I spend a good deal of time actually researching stories, finding things that I think aren't covered enough, and I bring them to this show. So rarely am I the guy with breaking news, but I've got some breaking news right here. Stonington Farm has got their next Jackson delivery date set up, and that is going to be Friday, November 18th. So Friday, November 18th, if you want to place an order, you can get a half cow if you want to. If you want to stock up a freezer, and I'm telling you, the way the economy is going right now, having a little bit of extra nutritious beef in your freezer is probably not a bad idea. They're telling us about the diesel shortage that's going on right now. It's happened before, but we've never had such an idiot in charge of energy policy in the United States. So this might be a different game this time. But you can get a whole cow, or if you want to place a smaller order, just get a few ribeyes. I love the chuck eye steaks, but don't order too many of those because sometimes they run out, and that's going to leave me hanging, and I love the chuck eye steaks. They've also got great hamburger. They've got organ meats. Check out their website, stoningtonfarm.com. That's S-T-O-N-N-I-N-G-T-O-N, farm, singular, .com, stoningtonfarm.com. You can see everything that they've got. And then there will be a phone number where you call and you actually speak to the local farmer down there in Perkiston, Mississippi, and they will find out exactly probably what's best for you. You can ask them questions about the different cuts of meat, what you're looking to feed. Apparently, Katie Stonington, this is breaking news because she just texted me to let me know they're coming on the 18th. And she said she did a delicious pot roast last night. She's going to actually give me some of the homemade broth from this. I'm excited about that as well. But you might be able to get some good recipes from her, too. This is the way cows were designed to be raised. They are Mississippi born, raised, and processed. They are fed nothing but grass, which is what God made cows to eat. Cows were not going out and picking corn. Cows are eating grass. They are no antibiotics, no hormones. This is a great nutritional profile for beef, so you're going to improve your health, you're going to save some money, and you're going to support a local Mississippi farmer. And I believe there's going to become a day where I am very glad that I have the inside track and am an existing customer of this farm. Should there be shortages anywhere else, I assume I might be a little higher on the pecking list than the general public who may freak out and seek out this supplier. So that's stoningtonfarm.com, stoningtonfarm.com. Check it out. November 18th, they will be coming up here. And the way they do this is basically they just pick a couple of spots in Jackson and they schedule it. They come up there with their big freezer and they just hand out beef to everybody that has placed an order. So get in line, and it's just fantastic. You're going to love the people too. Katie Stonington, the wife of Dr. Michael Stonington down there in Perkiston, she's the one that generally does the deliveries, and she's fantastic. I'm just such big fans of these people, and their food is such a high-quality beef. I've been doing the carnivore diet. I will tell you, one thing I haven't really mentioned about it, I'm starting to see some bumps on my stomach, and I'm not talking about any kind of hives or anything like that. I think they're those abs people talk about. The carnivore diet, a low-carb diet, will shed some pounds, so if you are thinking about that, I would suggest you look at the high fat, the exact opposite of what the medical establishment's been telling you to do for decades. You should be doing high, healthy fats, low carb diet rather than the 60 to 70% of carbs that everybody else is getting. Now, this carnivore diet appears to be pretty good for burning body fat. So, anyway, we'll see. Washboard abs by Christmas. A little bit of economic news here I wanted to get into. Charles Hugh Smith is a writer that I like to follow. He's got the Of Two Minds blog. He's great at writing headlines because I always click on it, not knowing it's him, but if I see the headline, I click on it because he has compelling headlines. But he's a great writer, but he wrote this. I'm going to take a little bit of exception to what he wrote. He said, "The era of all-powerful central banks is over for a simple reason. They failed. They failed their citizens, their nations, and they failed the world. Their policies have pushed wealth and income inequality to extremes that have destabilized the planet's social, political, economic, and environmental spheres." Now, he's not wrong with that second statement. Their policies have pushed wealth and income inequality to extremes that have destabilized the planet's social, political, economic, and environmental spheres. Spheres. He's exactly right about that. But when he says the era of all-powerful central banks is over for a simple reason, they failed, I take a little bit of exception to that. They didn't fail. This has always been their goal. The central banks have never been designed to serve the citizenry of the world. Central banking, whether it's our own Federal Reserve or central banks around the world, are always designed to serve the elites. Central banks serve Wall Street. They have never been there to serve the American public. The Bank of England has not been there to serve the English. The ECB, European Central Bank, has not been there to serve the European citizen. No, the central banks that collude together, the wealth inequality is a feature, not a bug, for central banks. Now, they failed us. He's exactly right. But they have not failed themselves. It is mission accomplished as far as central banks go with the wealth inequality. They've got us exactly where they want us. And speaking of that, I ran across a Twitter feed of a woman named Ali Wolf, A-L-I-W-O-L-F, Ali Wolf. And when I look at her description, it says she's a chief economist at Zonda, all things housing, labor markets, and consumers, involved in monthly meetings with the White House to discuss real estate trends. I think I've seen an interview with this woman. She's quite sharp. In fact, she is being tapped to go to the White House. It's a tad bit concerning, but just know that if she's having monthly meetings with the White House, it's interesting that the White House sends out their puppet Biden to tell you that everything is humming along great. She had some statistics here that are pretty stunning on the housing market. She tweeted out, our data is now capturing a 70% cancellation rate in Phoenix. This is on new homes. These are people who put in contracts with builders to build these homes. They now have a 70% cancellation rate. 70%. Now, what is this going to mean to builders? What is this going to mean to the construction industry? Arizona is one of these places, and I haven't been to Arizona in a long time, but boy, has it been a hot real estate market in both housing bubbles. Didn't it get really hot in Arizona? Now, I know it's a dry heat, they tell us. But apparently, it's a quite attractive place to live, and people have been moving there by the hundreds of thousands over the past couple of decades. But it's always been kind of one of these markets. Las Vegas, Phoenix are always mentioned in these large housing bubbles. But if 70% of housing contracts, that has got to be absolutely catastrophic. And I don't dance on the graves of the home builders. They're trying to earn a living. Of course, they have benefited from artificially low, manipulated interest rates. They made a lot of money while damage was being done to our economy. Not their fault. They were just capitalizing on horrific monetary policy here in the United States. I don't blame them, but when things turn, it's kind of one of those, you dance with the devil. I'm stuck in the middle of that phrase. What's the next part of it? You got to pay the fiddler? Something along those lines. Or am I conflating Fiddler with The Devil Went Down to Georgia and Charlie Daniels Band? I don't know, but when you get in bed with dogs, you get fleas. How about that? And so the home builders have been able to capitalize off of this big bubble in money printing, this artificial suppression of interest rates. I hope they socked their money away. A smart home builder would make hay while the sun shines, while the Fed is artificially manipulating interest rates to keep them ridiculously low, where people are out there getting mortgages for 2.8% on a 30-year mortgage, and the housing prices are going through the roof. They probably never made so much money as they did last couple of years, at least until the inflation hit and lumber prices went through the roof and then through the floor and then back through the roof and then back through the floor. Very tough time probably to do cost projections on any new building, but hopefully any smart builders out there realize that this can't last forever. The problem is, for most humans, we're not good at really kind of thinking when we're in a bubble, seeing that it's a bubble and socking away some money, realizing that the good times are going to end at some point. But 70% of homes, and through this thread, it apparently is that a lot of homeowners put down $1,000, $2,000 on a new home with a builder. And now they're realizing they may have put down $2,000 to buy a $500,000 house when they signed the contract a few months ago. Now realizing that $500,000 house is really, in today's market conditions, only worth about $375,000. And they're saying, I tell you what, instead of taking the $125,000 hit on this new house, you can just keep my $1,000 or $2,000. Now, I don't know how far along these projects are if the home builders, and this is just the Phoenix market, but you can rest assured, this is going to happen all over the country. as interest rates go up and people realize they signed a contract for a $400,000 house using the comps of 6 months ago or even 3 months ago, and now they're realizing, uh-oh, I am now about to pay $400,000 for a house that if I got into it and needed to sell it, the actual value of it is going to be somewhere markedly less than that, 10, 20% less than that. Of course, most homeowners are still clinging to the idea that this real estate correction is just, it's a temporary thing. We had the Federal Reserve come out yesterday and say they're keeping interest rates higher for longer. Now, check the 10-year bond, which is what drives mortgage rates, and the 10-year was at about 2% again. It had dipped down below 4, but it's back up around 4%, so now mortgage rates are over 7%. This is going to hurt the builders, and I don't know if anybody remembers 2008, the cascading effect of what happened. You're talking about, I believe nationally, home transactions over the past 8-9 months are down 31%. That means essentially all realtors are making 31% less. Builders are making 31% less. Again, they had a good run at it. Same thing for a realtor. If you were in this housing boom and a whole bunch of people got their real estate licenses during COVID over the past couple of years in this housing boom, hopefully if you sold some houses, you socked some money away. Because I certainly could have told you, and probably did on this air, it wasn't going to last forever. It was insane. Even here in central Mississippi, I was stunned to watch what was happening here. People selling their houses in a matter of hours for over asking price. That's not normal. It's not good unless you cashed in on a house. Unfortunately, most people who did had to plunk down even more money to change residences. So now they're in a maybe more expensive house that is also losing value. This is not good. And we know how housing can ripple through the rest of the community. There's a lot of businesses that rely on housing. That's a big chunk of our economy. So we'll see how this thing plays out. When I come back, we'll move on to our other segments. Stay with me. Yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Uh-huh. Yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again, y'all. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Friday. 10 o'clock on Friday, we focus in on foreign policy stuff, and my segment here, False Flag Friday, is we are constantly barraged with false information, lies, and manipulated events or created events to draw people into war. I talked earlier about the fact how odd I think it is that on the right, it is controversial to be considered anti-war. I proudly wear that label, much like I would be anti-cancer or anti-child abuse. And it's interesting to me. I can be charged with, accused of, I guess it was a better way to say it. I don't know, for now. Who knows? With the government we have right now, maybe someday I'll be charged with something. But I can be accused of being anti-American because I blame America for everything and think we have a lot to apologize for. I don't blame America for everything. See, this is a confluence of propaganda on people. I blame our government. I blame our government for a whole lot of things, and the wars are a part of that. It's the government. It's not the United States. It's not our Constitution that declares wars. But for those of you who believe that I am somehow anti-American, because I always seem to find a way to blame America for every conflict, including what's going on in Ukraine right now, I bring in my reinforcements, a couple of late greats. This is what George Washington said. This is a George Washington quote. Quote, observe good faith and justice towards all nations, cultivate peace and harmony with all, unquote, George Washington. George Washington, no pacifist. And then Tommy J. Thomas Jefferson said, quote, commerce with all nations, alliance with none should be our motto, unquote. Commerce with all nations, alliance with none should be our motto, unquote, Thomas Jefferson. Again, no pacifist. But they were obviously quite, I could spend really the next 30 minutes going through Founding Fathers quotes of the horrors and the misguided notion of war as being something that should be praised by the American people. To show you some of the scam, I ran across this clip. Well, I'll go ahead and play it here. This is what's going on in Ukraine right now. I've got some good news. I'm looking at my notes here. I've got some good news. actually with this, of something that's happening in Europe, not here in the United States yet. The French again. The French. I know we like to make fun of the French, but boy, they do get some things right. But this is the same old racket in Ukraine that went on in Afghanistan, went on in Iraq, and it's finally kind of been mentioned now. The war is still raging in Ukraine right now, which is a tremendous tragedy and extremely sad for the Ukrainian people and the Russian soldiers that are having to fight this battle, prompted by NATO and the United States. There I go again, blaming the U.S. for overthrowing the government of Ukraine in 2014, but it's true. But it's the same old games being run on us with this war, and it's first mentioned. This is the first time I've heard it brought out into the open. This is this von der Leyen. She's the head of the European Union, and she tells you what the plan is next.
This is the immediate support, but of course there is also the mid and long term support for reconstruction. And indeed, next week we will have, in the context of the German G7 presidency, co-hosted by the Chancellor and me, a conference on the reconstruction of Ukraine.
There you go. Oh, some fat reconstruction contracts going out now. See, here's the game. Provoke a war or just start a war. Typically, we just march straight in and just start a war. This one, we just spent 30 years really provoking it, and then the last 8 years really stoking it with the overthrow of the government and then Trump giving lethal aid to lethal weapons to the Ukrainians so they could kill more Russians. And then the Russians come in, we kick the whole thing off. But the reconstruction contracts. I don't know how many bridges and buildings we built in Iraq, but it was hundreds of billions of dollars worth. These fat reconstruction contracts, that's what's on the table now. They can't even wait for the war to get over before they start handing out reconstruction contracts for Ukraine.
This is a conference that looks at the how should we address the reconstruction. It is a huge task. It is an international conference. The best.
Oh, this is going to be a huge task. There's going to be some fat stacks of cash ready for the Halliburtons, for all of these companies that will now get this money. It will be loaned to Ukraine. Of course, it'll never go to Ukraine. It'll go straight to the contractors. They are a big part of the war profiteering. The defense contractors get the front end. The reconstructors get the money on the back end.
Experts worldwide will join and discuss how to best approach technically, but also financially, this reconstruction process, together not only with the European Union, but also with our global partners. And, of course, the reconstruction process and the massive investments that are necessary should be aligned with the needs for reform in order to really pave already the path to EU membership. Ukraine, as you know, is a candidate country, so everything should be focused on this common journey that we will undertake together.
And they go ahead and float out the idea that, Ukraine's still a consideration for NATO, furthering inflaming what's going on with Russia, which is their red line is Ukraine cannot be in NATO. Anyway, the reconstruction contracts, there you go. They're kicking them off. They're going to have a little confab. They're going to talk about the air quotes here in the studio, investment needed. Taxpayer money needed. Taxpayer money from here and from Europe. Oh, everybody's going to get fleeced for this reconstruction. The French have got it right. I guess I'll play this. I think it's got some good audio.
Sortons vite de l'OTAN! Sortons vite de l'OTAN!
Now, what this is video of packed streets in France. Packed streets in France flying French flags. And when I talk about packed, this is one of those things where if you need to go to the bathroom, you're just going to have to wait. You can't get through this crowd. What they are chanting is, I will translate for you as it was translated for me, let's get out of NATO. This is a massive protest against NATO and the EU on the streets of Paris, France. So there's your good news for the day. The French people realizing that all of the NATO provocation of Russia that led to this war and all of the NATO and American and European sanctions against Russia that are backfiring and making the people in Europe and the United States poorer by the day, they realize this is no good. These are packed streets in France to get out of NATO. Hasn't happened here yet. I'm not holding my breath. Now, here's a funny one. Afghan Special Forces soldiers who fought alongside U.S. troops and then fled to Iran after the chaotic Western withdrawal last year are now being recruited. Being recruited by the Russian military to fight in Ukraine. The headline of this story is, Russia is recruiting Afghan commandos trained by the U.S. to fight in Ukraine. This is another one of the great playbooks. I got to hand it to them. They're geniuses. Taxpayers paid Afghan commandos who will now be fighting against Ukraine in Ukraine as the United States faces off with Russia in a proxy war there. We're going to fight against more people that we trained. Very similar to fighting the Mujahideen that we trained when we went into Afghanistan. Fighting the ISIS fighters that we trained to take on the Syrian government. It's really quite interesting. Our training gets out there far and wide, doesn't it? And speaking of Afghanistan, you want to know how to create terrorism? People have been led to believe that terrorism, as George Bush said, they hate us for our freedom. These are just some radical people halfway around the world with some crazy religious ideas that just hate the fact that our little girls can grow up to vote, so they just lash out and attack us. They leave out the part about American bombs dropping on the heads of people in the Middle East for decades and overthrowing their governments and strangling them financially through sanctions and 500,000 children dying in Iraq during the 1990s. We leave all that stuff out and boil it down to they hate us for our freedoms. But if you want to know really what creates terrorism, the United States on Saturday released the oldest prisoner who was held for two decades at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. After his arrest in Thailand in 2003, soon after the so-called Global War on Terror was launched, 75-year-old, can't pronounce his name, was transferred to his home country of Pakistan. Amazingly, he spent nearly 20 years in U.S. detention at the high-secure military prison without trial, nor was he ever formally charged. He was suspected of being an Al-Qaeda financier. The guy was never charged with anything. Businessman Paracha was arrested in 2003 in Thailand and accused of financing the armed group, but he has maintained his innocence and claimed a love for the U.S. So they finally let him go. They also, I believe, it remains that most inmates who spent years at the notorious facility were never actually charged or saw trial, with international outlets noting that out of the 780 inmates held there throughout the post-9/11 war on terror, 732 have been ultimately released without charge. You want to know how you create terrorists? You go around the world scooping up people that you have no evidence that they've done anything. I talked about before, Taxi Cab to the Dark Side, where they were offering $25,000 to turn in your neighbor in Afghanistan. How many people you think found somebody that maybe an ex-husband? I don't know if they have a divorce problem in Pakistan and Afghanistan. Anybody you got a beef with? I know a couple of people that I would turn in for $25,000 just for the blanks and giggles of it. This guy's son was apparently also snatched up. Where was that here? I don't see it in here, but this guy's son was also. So if you want to know how to create terrorists, snatch up 732 Middle Eastern men, don't charge them with anything, keep them from decades in a jail, arrest their children, and then just send them back with a pat on the head. Hey, sorry about the last 20 of your years of your life being stripped from you. Good luck with that. And every one of these 732, including this guy who was held for 20 years and just been released, he's got a bunch of relatives that probably aren't real keen on the U.S. kidnapping, detaining for decades their friends, their family members. You want to create a terrorist? That is the exact recipe. I'll be right back. All right, I've already said some pretty unpopular things during the show today. I'm not going to stop now. There is very little difference between the two parties or presidents when it comes to foreign policy stuff. Very little difference. Now, there is a little nibbling at the edges here and there, but mainly the war party has captured the U.S. federal government, and Donald Trump didn't change it, and Joe Biden certainly is exacerbating the problem. Couple of stories to that. To that end, on Monday, President Biden's special envoy for Iran, Robert Malley, said the U.S. isn't going to, quote, waste its time, unquote, on talks with Tehran to revive the nuclear deal and would use a military option as a, quote, last resort, unquote, against Iran. Negotiations between the U.S. and Iran on the nuclear deal, known as the JCPOA, have been stalled since early September. The Biden administration hasn't officially said it's done with the talks, but Malley's comments are the surest sign that diplomacy between Washington and Tehran is dead. Now, for the Trump supporters out there who called me and told me what a great genius move it was for Trump to rip up a peace deal, for some reason that was a great idea, you should be thrilled with the Biden administration that is not going to seek diplomacy with that. And we got news this week that the Saudis have, air quotes here in the studio, intelligence that says the Iranians are just about to strike. So everybody's on high alert over there. We may still get our Iran war after all. Matter of fact, we may get six or seven wars all at the same time. Thank goodness Trump got us out of that Iran nuclear deal. I had a caller call me and say he did it and it was brilliant because that deal was going to expire in 5 years or 10 years, whatever it was. So the idea, the thinking is something's going to end in 5 or 10 years. So instead of renegotiating it to last longer, you just tear up the whole thing. It's absolutely ridiculous, but Biden carrying the same water. This is at the behest of other countries like Saudi Arabia and Israel. These are the people that actually always call the shots. The same story is out about the fact that the Biden administration is keeping us in Syria. No plans to withdraw from Syria, I believe, is the story here. Or end sanctions there. If you remember, Donald Trump did take our military forces out of there, except for leaving a contingent of military personnel in there to steal the oil from the Syrian people. We're still controlling the Syrian oil fields in what is a war crime called pillaging, I believe. Abject theft. Well, the Biden administration just loves the idea of stealing Syrian oil, so we're going to stick around and continue to do that. Another thing, as I said, I'm on an unpopular thing here. I can't do it. It's my notes. As the news comes across, I report the news. One of the weirder things that I see out there is people trying to say that Trump was right about Europe relying on Russia for natural gas. He's been vindicated. This is a bizarre leap in logic to me. Had we not overthrown the government in Ukraine in 2014, had we not sent lethal weapons to the Ukrainian Nazis to murder ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine, everything would be going, there would be peace in the world, and Russia would be delivering much needed natural gas to Europe for what I guess would be a reasonable price. Just countries doing business the same way that we ship goods out of the United States and into the United States. But Trump said, you need to get off that Russian oil. You're going to regret doing it. And now that Putin, misguidedly, I'm not for Putin's invasion of Ukraine, but he was essentially forced to do it as they were moving NATO closer and closer to his door and murdering ethnic Russians there. So the U.S. provokes Russia. Europe has to sanction, or it has to. Europe sanctions them, cuts off the natural gas, and everyone goes, look, Trump was right. He was only right because the West forced this action to take place. Had we left well enough alone, the Russians were providing natural gas, the Europeans would be getting it for cheap. But it turns out all of those promises of you can cut off or you need to get off that Russian oil, we'll take care of you, turns out we don't have enough to help them out. Huh. That's weird. I mean, not that our liquid natural gas lobbyists are not doing swimmingly right now. About 70% of all of American LNG exports were headed to Europe in September, but it's not enough. Apparently, there is going to be some freezing and some really cold people in Europe because all those promises of getting off of Russian oil and buying from us instead, We can't quite handle it. And let me tell you this, too. The less Russian oil that goes into Europe and the more exports from the United States into the European market means, anyone, less for the United States. And so your prices are going to go up. So all of this idea that you don't need to rely on Russia, we'll provide everything for you, ends up hurting the American people, the European people. And actually, Russia is doing just fine providing their resources to China, to India. What, that's about 2.5 billion people. It's a pretty good market for them, better than our little 330 million here. I think there's, 600 million people in all of Europe, something like that. Yeah, they probably came out ahead on this deal. And I don't know when it comes to Israel calling the shots, I'm not a biblical scholar here. I don't really know what the actual playbook for the Antichrist is. Does he take power and then lose power and then come back to power? Because Netanyahu is back at Israel. Now, a lot of these things I've read you, not negotiating with Iran or Trump's tearing up the nuclear deal in the first place, these were at the behest of Saudi Arabia and Israel. Well, Benjamin Netanyahu, who is a blood-soaked monster in charge of Israel, he's back. He was defeated last year. He's been resurrected, and he's going to be back there. So now you've got another war hawk in Israel. Now, they're always like this, but Benjamin Netanyahu, one of the worst, he's actually come and spoken to our Congress. He owns our Congress. Now, this is not an attack on Jewish people. There needs to be a distinction drawn there to me. The country of Israel, I don't like any governments. But the same way that there's horrific people at the Vatican does not make all Catholics bad. The same way that there are people of all faiths running this horrific government we have and governments around the world does not make any groups or religions all bad. But the country of Israel is responsible for a whole lot of what goes on in the Middle East. The U.S. taxpayers pay for it. We get absolutely no benefit to it. And it's the same with Saudi Arabia, too. But Benjamin Netanyahu, a blood-soaked monster, is now back in charge in Israel. I thought that he was finally gone. And we have sent some B-2 bombers now to Australia. Not content with the threat of nuclear war with Russia, our U.S. State Department and the hapless, dangerous, blood-soaked Biden administration is now doing more provocations with China as well. Now, I don't know, that may be another unpopular thing to say. The right seems to think that we don't need war with Russia, but we do need war with China. I mean, a strange, strange leap of logic, but we're getting closer to that. So I guess if they can get the trifecta, you know, when it comes to rebuilding contracts, and the weapons manufacturers would really just salivate at the idea of war with Russia in Ukraine, war with China in the Pacific, and war with Iran in the Middle East. Boy, those are gravy days. You might want to get out there and buy your defense contractor stocks right now. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, here in the Mac Hike of Flowood Studios, finishing up the week as we always do, chronicling the world's descent into madness in this segment called This Week on the Crazy Train. Now, this is actually kind of a crazy train quote of the day. I loved this. This came across in just a meme somewhere. Let me read this to you. So let me get this straight. I go to the grocery store and buy a pound of sliced ham wrapped in plastic, a loaf of bread in a plastic bag, a gallon of milk in a plastic jug, a pack of napkins wrapped in plastic, a Greek salad in a plastic container, a plastic bottle of mustard, and a plastic bottle of ketchup. And they won't give me a plastic bag to carry it home in because the plastic bag is bad for the environment. I have to admit, I'd never thought of it that way. But isn't that true? Let's see what we've got to get to today. In the world of the disease theater, I should pull it up again, but I won't. If you listen to yesterday's show where I got this startling discovery that RSV, which they're trying to scare everybody with right now. And many of our children have had and suffered with, some of the kids having to seek medical help for it. RSV, turns out, according to the British Medical Journal, as I read yesterday, came from anyone? No, not a Wuhan lab. It came from a contaminated polio vaccine that spread like wildfire across the world and still affects our youth today. That's right. The RSV you're hearing so much about these days was actually a creation of a pharmaceutical company in a contaminated polio vaccine back in the 1950s. Another disease to thank them for. And the disease theater here in the United States continues, the fear-mongering relentless.
The CDC tonight now reporting hospitalizations for the flu are the worst in more than a decade now. At least 12 states reporting moderate or high levels of flu activity. You can see it in red, the worst, from Texas to the Carolinas, then moving into the Northeast now. Flu especially hitting adults 65 and older and children 4 and younger. More than 2,300 people newly hospitalized with flu-like symptoms just this week. Health officials say the flu is hitting earlier this season and with more severe cases. Doctors still urging you to get the flu shot as soon as you can. They had said, get it before Halloween.
We're all going to die. It's the flu now. Flu, RSV, monkeypox, COVID, doesn't matter. About those shots, here's a clip.
A leaked hospital email from Central California revealed they have seen an increase in stillbirths. The staff member who leaked the email says the uptick happened after people started taking the COVID-19 vaccine.
An email recently shared with the Epoch Times, which was sent out to the healthcare staff of a hospital system in Fresno, California, reported an increase in, quote, demise patients or stillbirths. According to the email, that is expected to continue. A managing nurse wrote, there were 22 demise patients in August 2022, which ties the record number of demises in July 2021. And so far in September, there have been 7, and it's only the 8th day of the month. The staff member who leaked the email told the Epoch Times that since the rollout of the vaccines, fetal death has skyrocketed from its pre-COVID-19 vaccine average. She said it used to be 1 to 2 deaths every 3 months in her hospital alone. The staff member spoke to the Epoch Times on condition of anonymity due to fear of losing their job. The Epoch Times reached out to the head nurse who wrote the email to request a statement on why there has been a rise in what she called, quote, demise patients, but there has been no response. Dr. James Thorpe in Florida, who specializes in maternal fetal medicine, told the Epoch Times that the content of the email is consistent with over 1,300 peer-reviewed publications in just 15 months documenting severe complications and death after the COVID-19 vaccines.
Nothing to see here. They typically have a little bit less than one stillbirth a month in the hospitals previously. Now they're up to 20-something a month. From 1 to 20, 22, I think, what'd she say, 28? Nothing to see here. Also nothing to see here. Lincoln National Group, they do group life insurance. Their stock took a big beating the other day when they had an earnings call. Turns out their stock dived something like 30%. Not a good time to be in the group health stuff. This synopsis of their financial condition. Lincoln National Group Insurance death payouts for working age in USA 18 to 64-year-olds. 2019 is pre-COVID, and it's the baseline. 20 hits, no vaccine, but with COVID out there, there was a 9% increase in deaths during 2020, the most deadly year of COVID, forcing us to lock down and mask and run away from senior citizens. There was a 9% increase in deaths in 2020. 2021, COVID was still there, but they added the vaccine. And in 2021, they had a 163% increase in deaths among their working age population in their group health stuff. Nothing to see there, and certainly nothing to see here. This was an interview with I can't remember if this was a pathologist or an undertaker, but it's somebody who examines human bodies after death.
They're not regular blood. It is something the body has constructed, but it's not clots. They behave like clots because they grow inside the arteries. They form the shape of the arteries. In much the same way, you know, have you ever seen on YouTube where somebody's very sadistically poured molten aluminium down a termite mound? and they've then dug away and they've got a perfect cast of the termite mound or the ant nest. That's what happens with this white growth. This white growth is growing inside these and it takes the shape, the exact shape of the artery very slowly over time.
Nothing to see here. Nothing to see here. Remember the words. Safe and effective. I'll be right back. From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling. All right, in my weekly public service announcement, let me remind you, if you are looking for somewhere to go out to eat anytime during the week, but particularly during the weekend, please check out Your Pie up in Gluckstadt. That is 10 and 14-inch brick oven-fired pizzas made the way you want them right in front of you there. They also have pasta, paninis, salads, gelatos. They got it all up there. It's a locally owned, veteran-owned businesses. Got TVs up there if you want to catch a game, including high school football. They are there to serve you. So it's really fantastic staff. More compliments on that staff and how friendly they are. That's huge to me when I go and eat somewhere. We all go into convenience stores or into places where you really look like you were putting the clerk out to even approach them with a small purchase. Not at Your Pie. Very, very friendly, happy staff up there. So really always high to pump that as well. Some good employees up there. But check them out there at 340 Calhoun Station Parkway up in Gluckstadt, right there by Germantown High School. You can also call in orders through local delivery services or make sure you download the app. With the app, you'll earn points every time you make a purchase, and you will make a lot of purchases once you've tried their food, and you'll get all kinds of freebies, food, gelatos, all kinds of things. That's how these apps work. You can also order, keep your favorite order on hand, hit a couple of buttons, and your food be ready to pick up when you go by there. So check them out. It's Your Pie up in Gluckstadt, 340 Calhoun Station Parkway. Express your inner pizza. Joe Biden is hitting the campaign trail. I got to tell you, I had a lot of clips on this, but they're almost redundant. He's so bad. There's a couple that I left in here just for some giggles. He's hitting the campaign trail. It's explaining how important Joe Biden is to the victory for the Democrats coming up.
And by the way, if they do, that means, not a joke, everybody, that's why we were defeated in 2018 when they tried to do it. We went to 54 states.
54 states. There was also this. Somebody's put this out. They caught a couple of fibs, misrepresentations, untruths during a Joe Biden speech.
You want to improve people's lives? I bet some people in here want to improve people's lives. Are you with me? Okay.
This is Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I believe she was Hillary Clinton's former top chief. She's a Congress critter from down in Florida, introducing the great Joe Biden.
Come on, people. Let's wake up. We got the President of the United States in the house.
You gotta love that. There's no enthusiasm for this man, even at his own rallies. But what I think is funny is when you hear Joe Biden start to talk, she's trying to get energy from the crowd. I think she needs to focus her plea for energy to her man there.
Come on now. I know you got a little more energy than I hear. Okay, thank you very much. That's the crowd I know.
Okay, so she's got them whipped up. They're going to put on a great show. They're all fired up.
To the people I represent. Okay. Just wanted to make sure you were still here.
And so she was one of my biggest.
And so she was one of my. whatever energy she whipped up, Joe sucked right back out of the room.
Biggest supporters in helping me not only pass, but draft and move some of the legislation we're going to talk about today, a couple pieces of it. And I don't have a greater friend in the United States Senate.
Oops, she was in the House of Representatives there, Joe.
And I don't have a greater friend when I was vice president, nor as president. So, Debbie, thank you, kiddo. I don't know where you're sitting, but and FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Assistance, is going door to door to reach people as well.
This clip is 3 minutes long. This is one speech where they pulled out his flubs and mistruths during his speech. It's 3 minutes long. I don't want to spend that much time on it. Let's see. They brought in the closer during this campaign. They had to go back to the bench, pull somebody out of retirement. The closer, Barack Obama, has been hitting the campaign trail as well to try to make up for the energy deficit of Joe Biden. Let's see how that went.
And we're going to be violating the basic spirit of this country. Yes. So, sir, the only way come on. But this is what I mean. This is what I mean. I mean, we're having a conversation. This is what I'm saying. Look, there is a process that we set up in our democracy. Right now, I'm talking. You'll have a chance to talk sometime soon. You don't have to interrupt each other. You don't have to shout each other down. It's not a good way to do business. It's that you wouldn't do that at a workplace. If you wouldn't just interrupt people in the middle of a conversation. It's not how we do things. And this is
Miss Manners, Barack Obama.
Part of the point that I want to make. Just basic civility and courtesy works. And that's what we want to try to encourage. So, listen, that's okay. No. Wait. Quiet down. Hold up. Hold on a minute.
Not going well for the former president. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know. It just really tickles me. They brought that great orator in to go out there. He can't get a word in. The crowd unruly. I believe, and I'm not sure if I cut the clip off too soon or if it was a different clip, but a large chunk of one crowd that Obama was in front of erupted in a very sustained FJB chant during the course of the rally. So anyway, if Joe can't do it and Obama can't get through, at least they've got somebody on deck in the number two position that really inspires people.
I love Venn diagrams. I really do. I love Venn diagrams. It's just something about those three circles and the analysis about where there is the intersection, right? Yeah, I see people that you agree with me, right? So, okay. So I asked my team. I brought props.
Oh, we're in some capable hands, aren't we? There's your number three guy. If they can't get anybody, presidents, former presidents, vice presidents, if none of them are inspiring, we do have their Senate candidates, and the most notable one these days has been this Fetterman character, and I mean character in all sense of the word. He looks like something out of a mafia film.
In the meantime, John, you're aware of this other moment making news tonight, this moment on the tarmac in upstate New York. Let's show the viewers. President Biden and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer there. Schumer can be heard talking to the president about the debate in Pennsylvania between Democrat John Fetterman, of course, who is recovering from that stroke, and Republican Dr. Oz, of course, a race that could determine control of the Senate, as so many races could here. Our team listening to the audio closely, and Schumer can be heard telling the president, quote, "It looks like the debate didn't hurt us too much in Pennsylvania, so that's good," he said. And then he said, quote, "We're picking up steam in Nevada." But, John, obviously this speaks volumes about how closely they're both watching these razor-thin races for Senate, because any one of these races could determine whether Democrats or Republicans control the Senate after election night.
I mean, you can see how eagerly President Biden is taking in that update. The White House is following these races very closely because President Biden knows that the future of his presidency depends in great measure on whether or not Republicans win back control of the Senate.
Yeah, that's what it depends on. Yeah, so they're covering for Fetterman. They say everything's fine. No damage done. One of the most disastrous campaign speeches or debates in the history of modern politics, Fetterman. This was CNN. They got this guy, what's his name? Brooks. I forget his first name. Brooks and Shields used to be. I don't know if it still is, but this Brooks guy, this is the Republican on CNN.
I was unprepared for how much he was struggling. And so I found it.
He's talking about Fetterman.
Sad. And so the question is, should it be a live political issue? If I were a Democrat in Pennsylvania and I supported the Democratic agenda, I would vote for John Fetterman. I mean, it would not change my vote because the important thing is if you're a Democrat, who's in control of the Senate? I think communicating is part of the job of being a senator. And maybe he'll recover and maybe he'll be fine. We pray so.
Yeah, there's your Republican on CNN saying, yeah, well, I'd still vote for Fetterman. Maybe he'll be okay. Maybe things will turn around and his brain will heal at some time when he's on the job. This was an MSNBC person. Luckily, they're not prone to any level of fear-mongering or hyperbole when it comes to MSNBC.
And a historian 50 years from now, if historians are allowed to write in this country, and if there are still free publishing houses and a free press, which I'm not certain of, but if that is true, a historian will say what was at stake tonight and this week was the fact whether we will be a democracy in the future, whether our children will be arrested and conceivably killed. We're on the edge of a brutal authoritarian system, and it could be a week away.
I don't actually necessarily disagree with him. It's just, unfortunately, he's talking about the wrong side and a brutal authoritarian system. Oh, I'm running out of time. Let's see. Well, here was one. I'm gonna do one. This is this week on the crazy train. So this is one of these. This is one of these social justice videos. It's very bizarre, and I got to tell you, I'm a middle-aged man. I'm so confused on how I'm supposed to approach these kinds of things.
Why do I call myself gay if my pronouns are he, they, and I'm dating a girl? Well, say that louder for y'all in the back if you want me to. You can identify as any gender you want and use whatever pronouns make you feel most comfortable. Meaning you can identify as a male but use she, her pronouns if that's what you like. I identify as just me. Whatever that is. I'm just me, baby. And I like to use gay as an umbrella term, like how queer people use queer for themselves. Because that's what feels right to me.
Okay, I'm so confused. I'm going to try to leave this on a positive note, another one of these man-on-the-street things, but this is a good one.
If you were born 7 years ago, how old would you be?
7.
Correct.
Y'all give me more riddles.
How many states are there in the U.S.?
50.
She's good. There's some months that have 30 days, some that have 31. How many have 28?
All of them. 12.
She good.
You're asking the wrong person.
So there you go, a Gen Zer. Got them all right. It's just a little ray of hope for the weekend. Have a great one. I'll see you on Monday. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.